Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, diving into the rookie class and where they're going in startup drafts, because I think some of the stuff's pretty notable here. So doing a little Sunday strategy session on the rookie class in startup drafts. So Trevor Lawrence going at 109 basically represents a rookie tier of his own in startup drafts. So he's at 109, and then it's basically almost a round and a half, exactly a round and a half gap until Justin Fields, who's at 303, Pitts is at 305, Lance is at 308, Harris is at 308, and Chase is at 402. So it looks like, you know, there's some division in there, but it looks very much like a round tier there with Fields, Pitts, Lance, Harris, and Chase. So if you're in that 3-4 range, that's kind of what you're thinking. I think it is notable that you're seeing Pitts basically as the first non quarterback off the board. So that's notable. You've seen a little bit of you've seen some variance with where Harris is going off the board. So you have definitely seen that in terms of Harris going at some points going ahead of Pitts, but Pitts overall going ahead of Harris. So I think that is notable in the at least in the startup draft market for rookies. So so that's a notable one. And then when you compare that to where they're going in rookie drafts, you know, amongst themselves, it's similar. So it is Pitts ahead of Harris. It's by about a pick, based on what we're seeing. So that's pretty close. The ordering is pretty right. The ordering is basically right, with the exception of Lance going slightly ahead of Fields in rookie drafts. So Lance is going 308 in startup drafts, and he's going 103 in rookie drafts. That's ahead of Pitts. That's ahead of Fields. It's ahead of Harris, whereas he's going in the startup drafts. It is going Fields, Pitts, and then Lance. So a little bit of difference there. Again, it's not big enough that you're going to have a huge variance in terms of strategic implications. It's probably still your third round startup pick. It's not making a ton of difference, but I do think it's notable that Fields and Pitts are going ahead of Lance in startup drafts, whereas Lance is going just slightly ahead of them in rookie drafts. So Harris does slot in at fifth in both spots, and then Ja'Marr Chase sixth in both spots. And then it's a pretty big gap. So it is a pretty big gap after that, where it turns out to be a fall off after you get past Ja'Marr Chase. It's about a round tier. It's about a round until the next tier. So you got that basically three through the early part, the early part of the third to the early part of the fourth round is that tier of Lance, Pitts, Fields, Harris, and Chase. And then you drop to basically the fifth round where you get another tier, and that's Zach Wilson, Etienne, Javonte Williams. So that's notable there. Etienne 504 in startup drafts. And that is, he's going 108 in rookie drafts. That's actually a flip-flop with Wilson by just a marginal amount. Wilson's going 107 in rookie drafts. He's going 506 in startup drafts. So there's a one-spot difference there. Slight marginal difference, but that's notable as well. So I think the lesson to take from that is that's not really a firm ordering. Right, it depends. You know, the sample size on the startup drafts isn't quite as big as the rookie drafts, so we'll see that smooth out a little bit. And there are some different mechanics there. It's probably a bigger research project, ultimately, in terms of it overall. So that's pretty much the order there. And then Javonte Williams is at 9 in both spots. That's 510 in rookie draft, 510 in startup drafts, 109 in rookie drafts. So he's basically that's the tier. So it's basically becomes from Wilson, Etienne, and Williams, pretty tight cluster, 7, 8, 9 in startup drafts and in rookie drafts. Right, they're pretty close there in terms of where they're going off. So if you're looking, if you're in a startup draft, if you want to snag you know, ETN kind of look for maybe a round after Ja'Marr Chase is where you're going to start looking. And, you know, right around the time that Wilson's going, you should see ETN in relative close proximity to that. Whether, and if it's, if you're targeting ETN and Wilson comes off the board, like, it's coming right then. Fifth round or so there. And then Javonte Williams quickly after that. Notably, the gap between ETN and Williams is 6 picks in startup drafts, 1 pick in the rookie drafts. That's a sizable difference between ETN and Harris. So depending on what we think about when you're looking for arbitrage opportunities, when you're looking for profiles that look the same but at different costs, that's one that's notable. So you've got Harris going 308 in startup drafts, ETN going 504. So a couple round gap there. So if you're looking for some pedigree at the running back position, you can wait a couple rounds and snag ETN. So you like that, quite a bit. Then after that, it gets a little funky. So in rookie drafts, you have basically 111 is the median for Mac Jones, Jalen Waddle, and Devonta Smith. They're going to form their own mini tier there at basically 111. That holds up in startup drafts as well. So basically, it's a one-round tier there. Devonta Smith's actually going off the board first, 704, 712 for Jalen Waddle, 802 for Mac Jones. So they're all sort of in that seventh through the eighth round, and it's Smith, Waddle, Jones. They all sort of slot in together in rookie drafts at basically 111. So I think that's another notable. When you look at these, there's basically a handful of tiers, and they all come within about a round of each other. After that is another mini gap there. It turns into being Trey Sermon and Rashad Bateman. They're in the ninth round of startup drafts. So that's they're going 202 is their median, both of them. So pretty tight tier there. And it's a pretty tight range in terms of where they're going to startup drafts. Especially when you get out there, there's more room to kind of maneuver for those picks. They go within 10 picks of each other, and they're right there at the same rookie draft. So you can wait a little bit longer on Bateman. You know, if you're sort of, hey, you traded down, you got multiple nights, it's probably Sermon and then Bateman if you're looking to nab them both. Then after that, there's another gap. Michael Carter, notably, is one of the big outliers in terms of he's going in startup drafts, post-draft, 9.10, right? And that fits in very closely with Trey Sermon and Bateman. So Sermon, 901, Michael Carter, 910, Rashad Bateman, 911. So he's going 4 spots higher in startup drafts than he's going in rookie drafts. So that's a notable outlier. If you're trying to nab Michael Carter, it's probably a better bet to do it in a rookie draft. You know, if you're doing a rookie draft and startup drafts at the same time, say, hey, listen, I want to share a Carter. It's actually cheaper in rookie drafts than he is in startup drafts. So that's notable. A notable inefficiency there. So that's really one of the bigger ones in terms of it being a little bit off. Elijah Moore, Terrace Marshall, and Rondale Moore all basically operate within a one-round startup draft cost of each other. 204 for Rondale Moore, 204 for Elijah Moore, 205 for Terrace Marshall, and Rondale Moore going 1102. Elijah Moore going actually 1004, Terrace Marshall 1103. So in the startup drafts, it's going Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall. So if you're sort of looking, hey, I want to grab a Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall share, kind of look for Elijah Moore to go off the board, and then soon thereafter is where they're going to be. So that's another notable distinction there between that group. And then you sort of look, and it gets a little bit another tier kind of opens up where you have, in startup drafts at least, you've got Kadarius Toney, Pat Freiermuth, and Kenneth Gainwell going in the 12th round. 1206 for Toney, 1204 for Freiermuth, and 1207 for Gainwell. Gainwell's going at 211. Those other guys are going at 208. Amon-Ra St. Brown actually slides between Gainwell and Freiermuth and Tony. So it goes Tony, Freiermuth, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and then Kenneth Gainwell. It's being the ordering there. So that's a notable kind of inefficiency there, where Amon-Ra St. Brown's kind of jumping up a little bit in rookie drafts, where he's falling off the pace in startup drafts. Gets interesting again. Chuba Hubbard is in that 14th round in startup drafts. He's going 1407, but is actually going after Amari Rodgers and Diami Brown. They're in a very odd situation in terms of where they're going. So in startup drafts, they're the 29th and 30th rookies off the board. Rodgers is at 1506, Brown 1507. But that's basically 6 and 7 spots respectively later than they're going in rookie drafts. So that's an interesting dichotomy there. One of the beneficiaries going the opposite direction is Kellen Mond. So he's going off 303 in rookie drafts, and that's the 26th rookie off the board. He's actually going 22nd in terms of startup drafts. So there is a little bit of juice there. He's going earlier in startup drafts. Him and Michael Carter, the two biggest ones in terms of inefficiencies in the top 26 or so. Dwayne Eskridge is another one. He's going 307. He's the 30th rookie off the board, but he's going 25th in terms of the startup drafts. That's 1411. So when you get out here, there is some inefficiency going on in the market. Those are the big beneficiaries. The other one at running back is actually Ramondre Stevenson. So he's the 31st running back. He's the 31st rookie off the board. He's going 1308. He's actually 26th in startup drafts. So that's 5-spot jump in the rookie class. Hunter Long's another one. He's going 311 rookie drafts. That's the 34th rookie off the board. He's going 31st. In startup drafts. So that's a notable difference as well. So basically the guys that are going higher in startup drafts than in rookie drafts in the top, we'll call it the top 35 or so, is Hunter Long, Ramondre Stevenson, Dwayne Eskridge, Kellen Mond, and Michael Carter. Amari Rodgers, Diami Brown, both going later. Nico Collins going later, so he's a 28th rookie in rookie drafts, but he's going 1603. That's 32nd rookie in startup drafts. So a little difference there, which is notable in terms of all that. He's probably not a person we're going to be in on either cost, but I do think it's a notable difference there in terms of where he's going. So that's the big stuff. I would be careful on a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's going a couple spots earlier in rookie drafts than in startup drafts. That signals need is typically what it signals to me when people get vaulted up in rookie drafts versus where they are. And in startup drafts, that's typically a need type thing. So I just be careful on that. Bateman is going couple spots earlier. Rondale Moore going a couple spots earlier in rookie drafts as well. Not major, and they're kind of within a tier as well. So it's not like they're majorly going ahead of where they would be. But I think it is notable that the difference. Michael Carter also, I think I mentioned before, going well ahead of, he's going 14th in terms of startup drafts for rookies, 18th in terms of some of the RDP stuff. So that is a notable distinction in terms of where his market is. I think he's ultimately going to be a riser. If I had to take a big takeaway from this, when you sort of look at the 9th round, it's really interesting with Sermon, Bateman, Carter's in there as well. If you want to include Mac Jones in that in the 8th too, that's an interesting tier. If you're trying to hit some of these rookies, hit them again in startup drafts, that's actually an interesting tier to do it in. It becomes kind of a what do you value type of proposition. You look at guys like Michael Carter in that range. And also in that range, for example, is Mike Davis. David Johnson, Damian Harris. Some of these guys are going in that same range. And you just look at them and you say, hey, listen, who's got the better chance to start this year and make a difference? And with Carter, is the hope really a long-term bet? Because it probably shouldn't be with his profile. You're kind of hoping to catch lightning in the bottle, and it's probably a flip guy. There's better opportunities to really gain production in that startup draft than him. So it's notable that he's actually going higher in startup drafts than he is in rookie drafts, especially when you consider the guys in that range. People must just be going youth over established vet job, you know, with a job in that range. So that's a notable distinction. The other thing I want to talk about a little bit is Mac Jones. And Mac Jones is one to me that I haven't gone super detailed on Mac Jones in terms of why I'm sort of feeling the way I am about him. And it's a little complex, and I don't want to sort of overwhelm folks with sort of the thought process. I put a lot of thought into it, why I sort of have him the way that I do. And it's a little bit rule-breaking too, so I think there's some to it. I'll delve into it a little bit so that way you can kind of make your own judgment on it. But there was so much going on in rookie drafts. I don't love to break rules, so I didn't really want to, you know, hey, here are these six rules we should break with rookies. But he is one that I think it's a pretty clear play to me. Where he's going in the draft is basically, all right, you're going to take a first-round quarterback, or you're going to take a disappointing or a lackluster wide receiver profile, you're going to take Trey Sermon. And that's basically after Bateman, right? Or if outside of Bateman, let's set Bateman aside for a second because he's got a really good profile. The other people in that class, in that range, are going to be Waddle and Smith. So you have you have a pretty lackluster profile there with those guys. Bateman, you have the concerns about maybe some of the volume stuff. So with going to Baltimore. So that's really the range in which he fits in. I think when you sort of tilt and look your head, I think Mac Jones and Joe Burrow are pretty similar in terms of have similar limitations, don't have cannons, you know, don't have a howitzer for an arm, but good from the pocket, both played in really elite offenses with really elite supporting cast. How much does that help? How much does that hurt? I don't know, but at this point, there's basically a 7-round difference in their cost. That's a really interesting proposition. And is Joe Burrow that much of a runner that he's going to make that enormous of a difference? I'm not sure. And so that's one of the things with Mac Jones, right? If we're sort of grading, hey, listen, he's got these problems with how do we evaluate a guy with such a good offense? And that's a question. We're not making it a question for Joe Burrow, but we're making it for Mac Jones. And to me, that's a type of situation, like that's a little bit of a Herbert situation last year where he kind of closed down that gap. That's one thing to me. The other thing, when you sort of look at the profile, he is very good in terms of all the advanced stats and all that stuff. So you sort of look at that and can compare favorably to other guys in this class. You compare favorably to Burrow, and you could say, okay, like, what are we holding him back for? Well, the fact he doesn't run. You know, what do we expect for Burrow as a runner? That's the thing with me that I say, he's coming off an ACL. We're giving him all this advantage. And is he, how much more significant of a passer is he than Jones? And I think they suffer from some of the same limitations. We saw Burrow struggle down the field last year. All of those things, it's really interesting when you open up a 7-round gap between him and Mac Jones. That's the thing that, and as I sort of parlay that into a rookie draft setting, I'm looking at that profile and I'm like, huh, that's something that's really interesting. And I think the other thing, there's a couple other things with him. Obviously, he's not a top 10 guy. But I think we have to use a little bit of judgment, and not every top 10 guy or every guy that's not in the top 10 we should treat the same. Right? We didn't do that for Fields. We sort of view him in that same top 10 prism. And I don't think it's necessarily a top. I don't think there's like a huge drop off between 10 and 11, for example, right? I don't think there's a huge drop off between necessarily 11 and 12. It's more of a range type of deal, right? It's kind of later first or earlier first. And top 10 is an easiest way to think of it. I think you could probably say top 12 and be pretty good in the same statistical profile. Jones is pretty close to that. And in a class where there's five guys that went in the top 15, you kind of look at that and say, all right, in a different year, where does he go? And he's probably a top three guy in most years. Last year, is he 3-4? Is he in there sort of with Herbert? You could sort of debate that. But I think he looks a little bit more like a top 10 guy in other classes. And then I say, all right, well, this year, he goes 15, but a third of the guys in the top 15 are quarterbacks. That's a really rare occurrence. So I tend to feel a little bit more like we kind of have to look at him in maybe a little bit lesser of a top 10 profile. Maybe that's where we start at a base rate type of concept, but we sort of treat him in that more than we do in the later first through the second round range, where we see some of these guys like Bridgewater and that type. I think Jones fits in based on all of the stuff. And if you compared him to prior years where he would probably go, I think he looks much more like a top 10 guy than he does, this big slider, this big faller, like a Bridgewater type who fell to the end of the first round. That's kind of the feeling that I have about him. Again, I hate breaking all these rules and everything, but I it's a little bit more nuanced. And I don't sort of lead with, hey, here's all these 16 nuanced reasons because, that we should sort of bend this rule. But I do think this is a scenario where we have to use a little bit of wisdom on top of just pure numbers, right? What's the saying about if you're on a plane, do you want them to use autopilot or do you want to use the pilot to fly? Well, I want him to do what makes the most sense at any given time. And so we use the general rules and then we can sort of adjust from them and say, hey, listen, let's use a little bit of intuition. The thought on Burrow is it's a little bit of intuition, or the thought on Mac Jones is a little bit of intuition. Looks a little bit like Burrow on paper. It's a big gap in price. I do think he is going to get a starting job opportunity. You're probably going to be in a situation where he's not going to get superseded in the relative near term because the team's decent and you're not going to draft a quarterback up in the top 10 because you're probably not going to be picking there over the next couple of years. So that's really the way that I look at Jones, and that's kind of why I'm on him. The other thing, too, I think some of the athleticism stuff's overrated. He's not a big runner. He didn't run, but it's not because he's not athletic. I mean, he ran much faster than Baker. He ran the 4.6s, and he's a good functional athlete in terms of some of the other stuff that he does in his life, tennis player, all this stuff, got footwork, all of those things, agility. He's probably not a dog athlete in terms of there's other guys that are statues, right? The Roethlisberger types. He doesn't really look like that when you sort of look at the physical profile either. The picture with the shirt off, all that stuff, right? That's kind of how he gets shoehorned in. Again, is he going to be Cam Newton in the running game? No, but could he be a Baker Mayfield type runner where it's a point, point and a half, maybe 2 points in a good year per game in terms of some of the rushing stuff? I don't think that's unreasonable. And just because he hasn't done it, I don't think it means he's totally incapable of functioning on the ground. It's probably not the case. So, all of that said, I do think he's one that there's a lot of outs with him, specifically the fact that he's going really cheap. And if he he has a lot of opportunity to outperform that cost. And so when you're looking in the 20s at the quarterback position, you're looking at quarterback five, you're looking in, you know, in the late first, you're looking eighth round, there's a lot of opportunities for him to play at a functional level and rise in value. Ultimately, is he a, we're going to hitch our dynasty wagon to his profile type of player? Probably not. Probably not in terms of longer range, longer range team building, team planning. He's probably not that guy. But I do think, could he see a rise in value? And all of a sudden, instead of being quarterback, you know, in the 20s, we see him in the low teens, or we see him, you know, 10, 12, 15, something like that, where he's risen in value. Maybe we can use him as a pivot. Maybe we go from him to up the board, right? You add something to him, to a Stafford type. And I think that is a very reasonable possibility here over the next 3, 4, 6, 9 months. It's sort of in that span, next couple years even. And ultimately, is this something that you're going to necessarily hold? I am not sure, but I do think that there's the probable play. I think the window that you should be looking for is a cash out to a much more established or higher end quarterback and use Mac Jones to bridge the gap between them. I think that's going to be possible with he has a lot of room to uptick in value. Essentially, if he doesn't fall on his face, he's going to probably rise in value. And that's a situation that I kind of like to watch. And if he sits behind Cam Newton this year, probably not going to fall in value. So that's all of that is to say, I think that there's a lot of, if he sat out the entire year and then Cam walked in free agency, Jones is probably going to cost more next year than he does right now. And so all of that is to say, I think that there's some, if you play it right, I think that there's some really good opportunities in terms of cashing out, moving up the board. And listen, it's always easier to trade a quarterback, trade for a quarterback, especially a good one, when you're giving one up. And if that piece can be Mac Jones over the next 6, 9 months, I think that's a really compelling way to use the profile. Because I do think it's a discount, and I do think he can play. Did some of the stuff that happened with San Francisco and them using him as a pawn and some of the narrative stuff, is that unfortunate? Yes. I don't think it necessarily looks poorly on him. But that's something that I am watching for, right? If he starts to rise in value, I think that's an interesting one in a kind of Herbert-esque type of really falling down the board in startup drafts and has a lot of room to grow. So that's really the plan with Mac Jones. Ultimately, is he going to be Mahomes-esque? Is he going to be any of those things in terms of true difference maker? You kind of need to run a decent amount to be or have just huge, huge touchdown numbers. Are either of those things going to happen with Jones? No, but I think he can play well enough that, you know, people can elevate him. Right now, we're seeing basically three guys up there at the top of the board haven't really done much in terms of seeing Lawrence. You're seeing Burrow. You're seeing you're seeing Hurts. Right? Some of the other rookies are in that range too. So you don't need a ton for the market to overreact and vault them up the board. So that's kind of the play with him. Again, are we gonna sit here 5 years from now with him as a cornerstone quarterback? I'm probably going to have pivoted by that point, would sort of be my thought in terms of upgrading the position. But I do think he has lots of outs in terms of, at his cost, it's reasonable. The other thing it feels too is, if you're a contender picking in the later part of the round and you get this quarterback that falls to you, it's pretty compelling to just take him. Right, that's the other thing is, hey, I don't know if he's going to be a starter, but I've got two other starters, got three other starters, got a good situation, and I can sort of add to it with this gift of a quarterback that had a really elite season and looks a lot like Burrow on paper, and I have this gift that fell to me at 10, at 9. I think that's a really interesting, you know, at 12. I think that's a really interesting proposition in terms of just collecting a falling price. You don't have to pay up. Again, I like to thrift shop at quarterback. Mac Jones is a good representation of that because I'm not paying a huge elite prices for him. I'm sort of paying just my own first, probably if I'm a contender from last year. That's pretty nice in terms of, hey, maybe he doesn't have super elite upside, but I'm not paying super elite upside prices. And I'd much rather pay, you know, I'd much rather pay 110 for him than pay, you know, 105 for Zach Wilson, for example. So I do think when you get those opportunities that present themselves in this class like this, I think you should do it. And I think you should probably think really hard about doing it, at least, you know. And then I've seen people say, hey, listen, I'd rather have Sermon. I get it. I have him in a tier, and I would go Jones, Sermon, Bateman if I was going to do it. That's the order in which I would do it. If Jones is on the board and I have the pick and it's between him and Sermon, I'm going to take Jones. And then I'm going to take Sermon, and I'm going to take Bateman. So I sort of get some of the pushback, some of the concern about Jones's profile. And, you know, what I wrote with some of the charts and stuff on the non-top 10 quarterback guys, I'm willing to sort of squint and look at him more in the lens of like a top 10 guy. Maybe not necessarily give him the exact base rate, but look at him more closer to that than I would necessarily looking at him like in that bucket of, you know, late round one into round two type hit rate. I'd move a little bit further up in terms of him looking more like a top 10 guy. So that's really my thought on Mac Jones. Some people have asked, and I've been sort of kicking around how to best convey it. I do think it's breaking a little bit of the rules, but I think at the cost, you know, you're just basically collecting someone that's falling to you, essentially. And I think that there's a lot worse ways that you could spend that capital than taking a shot at a guy that, hey, maybe it's only a third of a chance that, you know, a third of 33% of it probability is a long-term start or something like that. But at the cost, that's a decent opportunity for a payoff. And I don't even think you necessarily need to get to that 33% chance for him to be valuable to you, whether that's in the trade market or something like that, as a pivot play here over the next few months to year plus or so. So that's really the angle with him. The other thing too is I think we're seeing this more and more, and I'm gonna probably do some work in terms of researching it for a writing project, but we're seeing quarterbacks fall in value almost every year. There's a discount, whether it's in season, whether that's in the offseason. Your Dak Prescott type in season last year, you know, you got Watson now, you got Rodgers now, heck, you got Stafford, you got all these guys that are kind of falling in price, but we like the profiles. Having a quarterback that could be an ascending type asset to package, or whether that's, you know, could you at some point get one of those guys plus for Mac Jones, right? All of those things I think are open, and it's easier to do that with a quarterback because you can give it. Right? You can give the quarterback to a team that needs a quarterback in a deal to do a quarterback trade and a super flex deal. Right? I think that opens up that opportunity as well. So, and not for nothing, if he starts like week one, he's probably going to cost more than he does right now. You know, you get a couple good weeks out of him. I know that their schedule from like weeks 5 through week 11 or 12, 13, something like that's outstanding. Sort of in that window, you see an uptick in price. Like that could be a situation where you could cash out to a better profile. Again, injuries are going to play a part, all that stuff. That would sort of be the angle that I would look at if I had Mac Jones. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. It's a little bit of a longer Sunday one, talking a little specifics about some of these players and where they're going in drafts, both in startup and rookie drafts. So until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.